This is The Beat, a podcast series that keeps you in the know about the latest community policing topics facing our nation.
Hello and welcome. My name is Maura Fiedler, and on behalf of the Cops Office, I'd like to introduce to you Ian Mitroff. Ian is an author, professor, and crisis management expert, and he's here to talk with us today about crisis management. Professor, or Ian, if I may call you that.
It's Ian. That's fine.
You are an esteemed systems theorist, well known as the father of crisis management. For our viewers today, can you please define crisis management?
Well, crisis management, briefly, is thinking both systematically and systemically about a broad range of crises and not preparing for each of them individually or in isolation, because no crisis ever occurs solely. It's looking for early warning signals. It's being proactive and designing damage containment mechanisms, which was not the case in the Gulf oil spill, so that you can contain the crisis ideally. It's considering and factoring in a wide number of stakeholders into crisis plans. Depending how you count, there are 11 to 12 different kinds of crises: economic, ethical, informational, environmental, public relations, so forth and so on. No crisis ever occurs in isolation. So if you just plan for one or two crises in isolation, you're almost worse off than — I wouldn't say that you didn't do anything at all, but the crisis will quickly get out of hand, because, again, they just don't occur. One crisis can set off a chain reaction. Every crisis is either the cause or effect of any other crisis. So you have to think and plan systemically and systematically, or you haven't prepared at all.
What does it mean to manage in the age of super crisis?
Well, the age of super crises is that these crises are bigger, costlier, deadlier, and the time between them shrinks. So we go from one crisis into the next, whether it's Japan or, say, a personal media empire crisis like Rupert Murdoch or, whatever it is. The time between them just gets vanishingly small. So the point is, in the age of super crises, one has to constantly do worst case scenarios and, again, connect the dots and think about how one crisis can set off. Probably the most important thing: no organization is exempt from any single type of crisis, whether it's BP or the Catholic Church or the government of Japan. It doesn't matter. It does matter, obviously, but no one is exempt. So either you're prepared or you're crisis prone. Unfortunately, most of the organizations are crisis prone. Why? Because denial is hard. Cops are exposed to a variety of events that most normal people are not. So therefore, they're, whether they like it or not, are used or maybe not used, but they have to deal with things that are unpalatable. In the corporate world, there's a tremendous amount of denial, because just thinking about crises raises enormous anxiety. One of the best ways to cut through the denial is, fortunately, unfortunately, the CEO of one company that has experienced the major crisis has to talk to his compatriots, whether competitors or other members of the industry, and say, don't kid yourself. You will go through at some point what I've gone through. And either we learn from one another's mistakes and successes, or we don't learn at all. I've studied a wide variety of crises that happen to almost any kind of industry, any kind of company, any kind of institution. And what one finds is that the lessons are pretty much the same. And what's really distressing is the inability, again, because of denial and the scary nature of crises, for us as a society and worldwide to really learn these critical lessons. One lesson, for example, is that there are no secrets in today's world. Media can find out anything. The height of irony is that Rupert Murdoch, who lived by a tabloid, is now being tabloid himself. And most people, can't get outside and say, how could our own technology or business be applied to us, against our best interest? So the inability to do crisis scenarios, to think the worst and prepare. And the sad thing is, those organizations that do this are actually more profitable. So it's not just doing crisis management for its own sake, which is the right thing to do, but it's also shown to be good business. But it's very hard to break through denial because crises are so scary. Nonetheless, over time, you know, humankind manages to learn. I mean, the great British poet T.S. Eliot said it best of all, humankind cannot bear very much reality. It's too painful. So we shut it and try to blot it out. Fortunately, you can deny it, but reality intrudes. It always has a way of coming back in. So in today's world, you're either prepared or you're not.
In closing, if you could give one recommendation to law enforcement or several recommendations that is at the beginning of a potentially high-profile incident, what would that be?
Well, the one thing I've always said over the years to any institution, any organization, if you want to be prepared, one of the best ways, hire an ex-investigative reporter, even better, you know, somebody in police work that has been an investigative reporter, have them go around and dig up all the dirt, which will be not hard to do, and publish a mock newspaper or mock 60 Minutes or leading on the daily news, whatever it is, that shows your organization in the worst light. I mean, to couple it to police, police are relatively prepared for civil disturbance. I mean, what else is new that comes with the territory? What they're not prepared for, an internal, ethical, moral crisis, you know, cops doing bad things and the like. Again, I mean, when I lived in L.A., whenever there was a crisis, the L.A. Times dragged out the 40-year history of LAPD showing all the crises they had had and mishandled. The point being, the current crisis was not an aberration. It followed a pattern. So, again, you're either working on yourself. You don't need to necessarily apologize, keep, you know, reliving the history, but saying we're committed to change. You know, what was acceptable, what happened in the past is no longer acceptable. I mean, Rodney King is really a watershed, not for LAPD, because it says there are no secrets anymore. Anybody with a cell phone, a little video camera, can get behind the scenes and now photograph, which was formerly hidden or, you know, only a few people could see it. Now that's with social media. A lot of it is anti-social media with bullying. Nonetheless, there are no secrets. So either you operate in really a public light, because it all comes out on the wash. I mean, if it can come out with Rupert Murdoch, who is just about as secretive and controlling as any human being on the face of the planet, and in the business, who is exempt? It comes out in the Catholic Church. Name me a single institution that you can't get into the secret locked up files or get a disgruntled employee, whatever, to come, you know, come clean with all the dirty linen. There are no institutions.
Thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
The Beat was brought to you by the United States Department of Justice Cops Office. The Cops Office helps to keep our nation's communities safe by giving grants to law enforcement agencies, developing community policing publications, developing partnerships, and solving problems.